The story today, this story from the Gospel of Mark, teaches us some very important lessons. But first, in order to sort of put it all together, I'm going to talk about a little bit of a technical thing about the Gospel. You may have noticed that there's two stories together. And in fact, we begin one, and then we leave that and tell another, and then we come back to the original one, as if Mark is writing some sort of musical composition. It's called ABA construction. Actually, Mark does this quite frequently, particularly when he's wanting to drive home some important points. And he drives them home by sandwiching one story inside of another. And by doing so, connecting the two. There are connections all over the place. It sounds like it's two separate stories, but it's really not. And that's what we want to think about a little bit this morning, because that will lead us then into what God has for us to consider this morning. The first story is about Jairus, the synagogue leader. He comes to Jesus wanting to have Jesus come and cure his little daughter. We can all relate to that love between a parent and a child. And when a child is lying in very serious illness, even ill unto death, we become deeply concerned. I'm sure Jairus was a man of many means. He was, after all, the synagogue leader. And we have to realize that in the time of Jesus, the synagogue leader in a small town, which is where they were near, that small town, the synagogue leader was like the mayor. It's the kind of thing that if you had a pothole in the front of your house, you wouldn't go to someone else. You'd go to the synagogue leader, and you'd talk to the synagogue council, and then they would talk about it, and they would get it all fixed. Holes in those days, they didn't have the cattle. But in the point of just using that as an example of what kind of leader this was. So this is a man not only of some means, but also of some sort of power, some authority, some public respect. People would go to him when they had problems. And so more than likely, he was one of those kind of people. I don't know what he means. Where you always try to fix everything yourself. And if you're trying to fix something mechanical, like me, what happens is you get about halfway through it, and then you realize it's way beyond my capability. I can't do this. And you end up having to call a professional, and it costs double, because now they have to undo what you did, and then you get the picture. So there's part of the teaching right there. This is a man of means, a man of great respect, a man of some authority and power. And he's probably done anything he knows what to do to make his daughter better. And it's not working. So he hears about this traveling preacher. And he leaves his place of respect. He puts down his pride. He puts that away. He comes down off of his pedestal among the people of the community, and he goes and he throws himself at the feet of this stranger, this peripatetic preacher, this traveling preacher who is walking around and saying good things. And once in a while, doing great works. And so he is now at his wit's end, his last resort, and he gives up everything he has. And he throws himself down in front of this nobody in the eyes of the people of that village. And he says, Lord, please, come. Heal my little girl. Jesus says, what? And then we get to the part of the second story. Now, this is a totally different kind of thing. It's a woman. Now, we know the place of women in the time of Jesus, don't we? They wouldn't be sitting up here. They wouldn't be sitting anywhere out here. Actually, they'd be sitting up there. In the synagogues, men were separated from women. Only men were here, the word, and the women were behind a sort of rail. And, you know, they were not the kind of people that were welcome to come and do the kind of thing this woman did. And beyond that, this woman is suffering from a terrible which is a problem for her, not only because it's a terrible sort of thing to be physically dealing with that, but what's happening is if we understand the Old Testament law, that if you were bleeding or you touched blood, you made yourself unclean. So you couldn't go to synagogue at all, even in the back. You couldn't go to temple, certainly to worship. And other people had to steer clear of it. Because should they have any contact with you, they themselves would become unclean. So this woman, because of this problem that she has been totally pushed to the edge. She has been pushed away from everybody. Now she's trying to solve the problem. Mark tells us that she saw many physicians. And in fact, spent all of her money. She had nothing left. She hears about this Jesus person. Again, someone who had a reputation for saying good things and was getting around a little bit, that, you know, he could work wonderful works. And so she goes in her mind, she says, he's not going to see me, because if he has to see me, he's not going to want to touch me. So I'm going to do this under the cover. So she kind of goes close to him and tries to touch, as it is said in one translation, the hem of his garment. Just a little bit. Just a little touch. That's all she wants. Lo and behold, she does this. And miraculously, she is cured of her malady, of her problem. She feels it in her body. She's suddenly starting to feel a little stronger. She's looking down and realizing she's not bleeding. She's probably very happy. But then Jesus, you know, who touched me? Sounds like maybe he was a little upset. Maybe. Maybe because, you see, by touching his garment, this woman made him unclean. Maybe Jesus would be upset about it. Because after all, he was now journeying to the synagogue leader's house. And if he was unclean, he wouldn't be able to touch anybody else. But as the story goes, we hear that that's really not Jesus' concern at all. Not in the least. Now, rather, she comes and fesses up to the whole thing. She said, the gospel writer says, told him the whole truth. In other words, she's saying, I'm sorry I did this to you. That's not Jesus' concern. Rather, Jesus turns and looks at her, and looks at her tenderly, and uses the word daughter to address her. Now, we know that Jesus wasn't always that kind to women. We know in the Gospel of John at the wedding at Cana, when his mother Mary was sort of pushing him to help the host, you know, make more wine. Jesus wheels on her, John says, and says, "Woman, what would you have had to be?" Well, if he was mad at this woman, he certainly wouldn't turn to her and call her daughter. What Jesus was doing was not only curing the malady from which she suffered, but Jesus was actually restoring her to her family, restoring her to her community, restoring her to family. She was now capable of being clean again. She could go and worship. She could give thanks to God. She could do all of the things that she had been kept doing. She now could be part of society. No matter what that would be in that day, she was being restored to wholeness.
Sad. They didn't have the energy to do that. They were overcome with grief, so they were
was dead. They were already doing a funeral. So, Jesus sends them away. And then, compassionately, he takes the parents. He takes a few of his own helpers there. They go in and they see the little girl. And what does he do? Reaches out. He takes her hand. Now, if you think touching human blood for someone who was soiled with human blood made you unclean, this really did. Because even if some member of your family had died and you had to wash the body and prepare it for burial and do all of the things that were appropriate, you became unclean. And there was a time after the funeral that you had to go through a ritual purification before you could go back to synagogue, before you could go back to the temple. Jesus wasn't made unclean by accident, like with the woman with the heaven. Now he's doing it himself. He's reaching down and taking the hand of a dead girl. And he's saying to her, "Talita kum." Little girl, get up. Suddenly, she is restored to life. Restored to life. Think on that. Jesus tells the crowd, "She's not dead, she's but asleep." What do we say about Christians when they die? What does St. Paul describe it? It's a falling asleep in the Lord. Until we wait for the resurrection of the dead, we even cross ourselves, we say in the creed, hoping that that blessing is our own. That we would merely fall asleep, even though the body lies in death. And that we would be raised up at the last day. These phrases fill our prayers. It is our earnest hope. And so what Jesus is doing is simply stating the obvious. Yes, she has died, but she's not truly dead. She's only asleep. And so I will take care of her. And he reaches down, takes her hand, and gently says to her, "Talitha." Suddenly, she gets up, starts walking around, as any 12-year-old girl might do. And what was his first concern? Give her something he eats that people don't eat. Just to prove that she's alive. But also out of concern. She'd been sick. So she needed new strength. That Jesus probably was the good son of a Jewish mother. And so always, whenever something like that would happen, eat something. I know my mother was Jewish, but she was ethnic, and that was always the case. If you're sick, eat something. If you're lonely, eat something. Eat something. That was the sign of being restored to something. Something being restored to family, being restored to health. So now Jesus has done this twice. First to the woman with the hand, then to the little girl. And did you notice? How long did the woman suffer from the bleeding? 12 years. How old was the little girl? 12 years. There's that number again. How many apostles were there? There were 12. How many tribes of Israel were there? There were 12. Jesus is speaking to us of the kingdom of God. That in all of it, this is the work of the kingdom. This is what the kingdom will do. The kingdom has come to reconcile all people to God. The kingdom has come to reconcile you to God. The kingdom has come to make us all whole again. Because healing isn't a matter simply of taking away disease. Healing is not a matter of the body. It may involve a cure, may. But healing is available to all. Because it is a matter of the spirit, of the heart. It is a matter of the soul. We see this. If, perchance, you've had a family member or have been involved in ministry, as I have, some people perhaps who were in hospice. The whole role of hospice is not to hasten death, no. It's to enable people, to empower people to die. Because it is part of our life. And very often when hospice really works, is we. Healing is about wholeness. Healing isn't necessarily about curing disease or chronic illness. Healing is about bringing us peace. Healing is about making us whole and realizing that life is what it is. And that when we lay down everything at the feet of Jesus, as did these two, we will find what we need. Now, so the lesson of today's gospel isn't just simply